Thank you for listening to the Highlander Podcast, where we have conversations about the past, present, and future of the outdoor industry. Thanks to Utah State University's Outdoor Product Design and Development Program for making it possible and for training the future product leaders of the outdoor industry. Learn more about the program at opdd.usu.edu. The Highlander Podcast is sponsored by the Outdoor Recreation Archive, a collaboration between OPDD and USU Special Collections to preserve the history and print materials of the people, products, and brands of the outdoor industry. Follow the archive at Outdoor Rec Archive on Instagram. The Highlander Podcast is sponsored by the Utah Outdoor Association, a business association focused on elevating Utah's outdoor industry through educational programming and events. Their membership consists of Utah's outdoor manufacturers, retailers, outfitters, and guides. Member benefits include networking opportunities, recruitment of talent, and brand promotion. More information about volunteering and membership is available at utahoutdoor.org. On this episode of The History of Gear, Ron Smith, founder of American Outdoor Products, talks about the history of backpacking food, buying dry light and turning it into what is now Backpacker's Pantry, and 75 years of outdoor food. Welcome back, everyone. This is Chase. And today I've got a great guest with me, Ron Smith, the founder of American Outdoor Products, joining us on the history of gear. It's great to have you here, Ron. Nice to chat with you. I think this is unique for our oral history series, this podcast that we put together. I don't believe we've talked to anyone from the outdoor food space. So you're part of an elite group.
What a lucky guy I am.
Definitely. Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I guess, your origins, you know, in the outdoor industry. I guess maybe we can start with, how did you discover this thing, which is we call the outdoor industry?
Well, myself and my business partner and got together in the 1970 former corporation, American Outdoor Products, and we decided to see if we could get into either the specialty food or something to do with sports. And those are the two industries that we picked. And I had, at that time, I was pretty active in rock climbing and backpacking and mountain climbing. And so there was also at that time, the REIs of the worlds and the Dicks and the Bass Pros, they didn't exist. This was in 1970, over 50 years ago. So what existed to serve the outdoor industry were small individually owned sporting goods stores. It just happened to be a pretty popular one a couple of blocks from me. So we went into the store and we were looking around at various products, and we came upon some food products, which at the time were called dry light foods. So my partner took down the information on the back of the bag, and we got in touch with the owner, who was Ann Benedict, who had started the company in 1951. And she was just about ready to close a sale to somebody else. And we asked her if she would please just give us a chance to take a look at it. And needless to say, we prevailed. And so in 1971, we got started in the dried food for backpacking industry, which at the time was a pretty small, very few numbers of companies. I think Mountain House might have been going at that time, I'm not sure. But the other company was back east. I've already forgotten their name, and they've subsequently gone out of business quite a while ago.
Yeah, it looks like Mountain House started in 1969.
Okay, so they
just right there, just kind of around the same time. It's interesting, as we've had conversations about different outdoor companies starting in different regions of the country. People are having kind of similar ideas around, oh, well, there's, you know, I'm doing this kind of activity and I need a backpack to help me do this activity. And you have similar companies that are solving similar problems on different sides of the country. It's interesting that there are a couple of food companies that started around this time. I imagine a lot of that you can attribute to just the increase in people who are climbing, backpacking, getting outdoors. Is that kind of what you saw?
Yeah, and those that backpacked had the same thing. I mean, when I backpacked, I would take canned goods with me, canned tuna, pork and beans. We'd take raw eggs. And so when you were going on any length of trip, that became a pretty heavy burden to carry all that weight. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure the reason the backpacker Dry Light Foods at the time got started, Aunt Benedict's children were in the Scouts, and she happened to work for a dried food company in California. And she put two to two together and decided to come up with some products that eliminated using dried foods to eliminate the water in the food. And lo and behold, Dry Light Foods was started. So that's pretty much the same thing that happened with everybody. I mean, you could buy beef jerky, and there were certain things, dried foods you could buy that were fairly light. But it was pretty hard to have three meals a day for any length of time with what was available, unless you were just brutally strong.
And Dry Light Foods, was it focused on the outdoor consumer specifically when it started in 51?
Absolutely. Very definitely. The other kind of parallel industry or use of the dried foods is the food storage. Mm. And with food storage, you don't necessarily have the problem of weight isn't necessarily an issue, because you can store the foods in your basement or wherever. But a lot of dried foods in today's world, freeze dried and so forth, are used for the food storage industry. But at the time, the dried foods for backpacking, which is what got me started, was relatively unknown. And like I said, the distribution at that time was so much different than it is today.
So where were you at the time when you got connected with Ann and ended up buying the company? Where were you living at the time?
I was in Southern California in what's called the Valley. I lived in Sherman Oaks, mm-hmm. Which is one of the suburbs of Los Angeles. Yeah. And my business partner lived in Santa Monica, which was, and again, another suburb of Los Angeles. And Dry Light itself started in Linwood, which is near Long Beach, California.
Right, right. So it's. I think it's interesting that your company started just around that same time that companies like the North Face and Patagonia were starting to come together in the late 60s and then the 70s. I think a lot of times we focus on those gear companies, but at that same time, there's this innovation that's happening in food, which is what you were a part of. What are your memories of that time in California and the outdoor companies in that area?
Well, as I said, I used to rock climb at that time. And when we could go to Yosemite, which I did, and rock climb there one time, but there was another place near Palm Springs that had granite. And other than that, in the valley, there was a place called Stony Point. And one of my friends who got me into mountain climbing and rock climbing lived out in the valley at that time. And we would go to the Stony Point, which was sandstone. And there was this guy named Yvon Chouinard. Some of you might have heard of him. He was climbing there at the same time. Now, needless to say, Yvon was not into the Patagonia at that time. But eventually he would start making hardware, and he would sell it out of the trunk of his car, climbing gear, which he first got started with in the outdoor industry by making climbing hardware, pitons and so forth. Now, Yvon doesn't know me from a man in the moon. But there were other people like Yvon that were young. He was a little older than I was. I was only in high school at the time. But there was other people that at that time in Southern California got into the outdoor for mountain climbing and rock climbing and backpacking because there was a need. They saw the need and they got started in a business, and Yvon just happened to be the most famous one.
So I'm going to go back a little bit further, even before you you got into the business side of the outdoors. You talked about rock climbing and getting outside, and that's something that, you did a lot. Who taught you that? Is that something that you learned about, you know, from, you know, parents or family or friends? Like where did that come from? When did you discover the outdoors and a love for the outdoors?
Well, it really came from two things. One, my grandparents lived in Southern Oregon. My grandfather was an independent logger, and I would go up there during the summer, and needless to say, they lived in the mountains of Southern Oregon, and I just fell in love with the mountains. Even though I was a bicycle ride from the ocean, I was more of a mountain person than an ocean person. And one of my best friends from a grade school happened to get started before I did and introduced me to skiing and mountain climbing and rock climbing. And so I would go visit him and we would journey out to Stony Point to do rock climbing, which he got me started in. And during the summers, we would go up into the Sierras and do backpacking and mountain climbing. So I was just very fortunate to have known a person that discovered the love of the outdoors the same way I did. And he introduced me to all those outdoor sports.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit more about dry light? I think it's so interesting that tell us a little bit more about Anne. It sounds like Anne was involved in the Girl Scouts specifically, right? Was she a leader? What was her background?
She was a single mom. She worked for a company in California that did dehydrating vegetables. I think her daughter was in Girl Scouts and her son was in Boy Scouts. And that introduced her to the need for food for when they went camping. And like I said, she was really a wonderful woman. And at that time, a single mom supporting her kids on her own was kind of a forerunner of what goes on in today's world. But she was just very industrious. She saw an opportunity and she just went for it, and she made it successful. She owned her own building, very small compared to what we have today, but she owned her own building and had her own retail store in the front of the building and made the food in the back. It's one of the typical almost start in your garage type of business. So she just had some basic dried, one of our things was Spanish rice, which was just rice, which is dry to begin with, and added some spices to it and beef stroganoff. And at that time, freeze drying really, it probably existed, but it wasn't anywhere near as well known or as prevalent as it is today. But so most of our foods initially at dry light were all dehydrated foods. And we would just take things that we could find dry and come up with various menus, recipes, and put them in a polyethylene bag and slap a label on it and sell them. Very different than what it is today with our Mylar foil pouches and nitrogen flushed and oxygen absorbers and all kinds of exotic meals that you can buy in a freeze-dried or dehydrated state. But it worked.
Yeah. Dwayne has been here to the university campus recently, and he was talking with some of our food scientists, and the terminology, I felt like they were speaking another language. I'm sure that you've seen an evolution to your point exactly, right? The evolution of how we make backpacking food and backpacking meals, camping food must have changed a lot during your tenure.
Well, at first there was dehydration, and that's just simply preparing the raw food, putting it on a tray and putting it in a dryer with hot air would just evaporate the water. And you would also, the food, if it was a vegetable or fruit, would shrink if you've ever seen dehydrated product. And then freeze drying came along thereafter, and Mountain Mouse was really probably the first in our industry to do that. With the freeze drying process, they freeze it rock hard, put it in a dryer, and bring down the temperature and put it in a vacuum. and then suck the air out, which is the moisture, and the food doesn't retains its size and color, and as far as the weight comparison between dehydrated and freeze dried, there's really not much, because it's a function of how much water do you remove from the vegetable or the fruit or the meat, whatever you're drying. But the freeze drying process has pretty much taken over the industry, even though we still use food products that are not not freeze dried. The other big difference between us and Mountain House and a couple others, they start with raw product and they prepare it, they cook it, they freeze dry it, and then package it. We don't do any cooking ourselves. We buy all of our ingredients are prepared. If their meat, for example, is pre-cooked and freeze-dried, the vegetables are pre-cooked and freeze-dried. And so there's a little bit of a difference in the manufacturing process between us and a Mountain House. And we're probably the two biggest brands in the industry for the outdoor use.
So, I guess another question for you. You started American Outdoor Products in what year?
I believe it was in either 1969 or 1970.
Okay. And then you buy Dry Light Foods in 71. What products were you hoping to sell as American Outdoor Products in 69 or 70? What, I guess you talked about the food industry. Was that your original plan when you started the company?
Well, it was the industry was our original target. We just knew that we both went to UCLA Business School, graduated in 1966. Even though we both went to UCLA, we didn't know each other at the time. We knew of each other because we could recognize the fact that we were both there at the same time. We actually met when we were going to USC and getting an MBA. And we got together and we had some classes together and we became very good friends. And at that time, we just decided we wanted to go into business. So we got the infrastructure set up with the corporation and decided to go out and find something. And we did.
And so this really happened right after you graduated.
Right after we both graduated with our MBAs, yes.
Wow, that's great. Once you did buy Dry Light, you buy a company, what's the first thing you do when you buy a company that's been around up to that point 20 years?
Well, Dry Light at the time as I said, the industry was very, very small at the time. It sold a little bit of its product through retail stores basically in California. Because California is a big outdoor area because of the Sierras and the Pacific Coast Range. But mainly it sold mail order and through its own retail store in the front of the plant. And Anne liked that because she was selling it at retail, so it obviously has a higher profit margin than if you're selling it at wholesale. But when we bought the company, we realized that it wasn't going to – there was – The e-commerce market did not exist at that time. So we knew that in order to grow the business, we had to expand our retail distribution. And so we hired a gentleman to do that. He was a salesperson. His job was to go out and contact Boy Scout councils that have camps throughout the United States. The canoe country in upper Minnesota and Wisconsin, where they do week-long canoe trips where they use dried food for their meals, and then backpacking. And so there was an institutional side to the business, which we weren't getting. And then there was also the retail. REI at that time existed, but it was really only a one. I think they only had their main store and mail order out of Seattle. They really hadn't started growing at that time. But so our plan was to grow the business by growing our retail distribution via that industry. And that's what we hired this individual to do. And that's what we did.
That's great. Was there food right off the bat that you wanted to add to the lineup? Are there things that you felt like were missing or things that you wanted to create? Where did you start getting involved in the development process of making new foods and adding new recipes?
Well, it's interesting because my partner and I were business people. We were chefs by any stretch of the imagination. But the lady that was kind of the general manager at that time, we would literally just come up with, well, how about spaghetti? And so to get spaghetti, you have to have spaghetti, and which is a dry product to begin with. You have to come up with the spices to make the sauce. And then if it's going to have meat in it, you use dehydrated beef or freeze-dried beef, whichever is available at the time. So literally when we first started, we would just think of various things that were just out there in the world and say, well, can we develop this meal? Can we develop that meal? And then eventually as we grew, we would bring in food technologists whose training was in the food industry, and they would develop various meals and various sauces. And then now we have a full-time person that's have had for some years, Soraya Smith, who's actually the president of the company now. And she's a trained chef. And so she has been our development for the last 20 years or so.
Are there any, what are some of the key innovations that you are most proud of when it comes to running this company over the last few decades?
Well, I don't know. We really didn't come up with innovations because we weren't in the food processing business. Mm. But certainly the freeze drying process was a major innovation for the industry, because the freeze dried foods and for many of the foods are a better product than a dehydrated, because they rehydrate faster. And with ours, as you probably know, is all you have to do is add boiling water and let it sit for 15 to 20 minutes, which is pretty much the standard of the industry now. So, and that's different than the dehydrated, because a lot of those you would have to put water in and bring it to a boil and cook it for a while to rehydrate that product. And so for the industry, the freeze drying process is certainly the major innovation. For us, it was just coming up with various meals that became very popular. For example, our pad thai, which we have a pad thai and then a pad thai with chicken, have been extremely popular throughout the industry, and most of the places where they're sold are the number one seller as far as an entree is concerned. So with us, it was really just developing various different entrees, desserts. But the business is mainly in the entrees. You can take cookies or candy bars or any kind of bars in today's world. There's zillions of them out there. But entrees are a little bit different. That's not so easy to go to the grocery store and find on the shelf, especially if you're going for multiple days. If you're just going for a day or two, you can stay alive with protein bars and whatever, beef jerky, whatever. But if you're going for multiple days, if you're hiking the Pacific Coast Trail, you're gonna need something more than protein bars.
Is there I guess when is the moment that Backpacker's Pantry becomes, you know, the brand? Is there a moment that happens? Is it something that happened over time?
No, it happened very early. We just felt that the dry light foods wasn't the best name, and so we actually came across a company in Seattle that had done work for, at the time, Jan Sports, which you may know of, was another one of those companies that started around the same time that we did. And they had done a lot of work for Jan Sports with logo design and so forth. And we came up, the combination of them and ourselves came up with the name of Backpacker's Pantry. That started within a year or two of us buying the company. And so we changed the name from Dry Light to Backpacker's Pantry very early in the game, and it's obviously been that brand name ever since. We just felt it was a little bit more indicative of what the product was.
You know what year that would have been, that name change?
If I had to guess, I would say it was 1973.
Okay. And then, do you mind talking a little bit about some of the moves in the 90s? You end up moving to Boulder. Maybe talk about some of the different facilities that the sure. company had, and maybe what motivated some of the move to Boulder.
The first move was from Linwood to the Valley of Canoga Park, and the reason was is that both my partner and I lived in the valley, and even though I wasn't once we bought the business, we both worked for it for a year, and then we decided that the business was really too small to support both families. So we decided to go back into the labor market. We were both MBAs, and so we went back into the labor market and got full-time jobs and hired this individual that I talked about. But Linwood was on the other side of Los Angeles, which means to go there, and my wife was the general manager. She had to drive through downtown Los Angeles on the freeway system, which I don't know if you've ever been in Southern California, but it's not fun. And she had to do that every day. So we decided to move it. We bought a building in Canoga Park, which was probably about three times the size of the facility in Linwood. And we worked in that facility until 1980. In 1980, I decided, myself and family decided, we wanted to get out of Southern California. So we moved to Redding, California, which is in the northern part of the state. And we bought a building there. We operated in Redding for 12 years. And we decided to move out of California. California is a phenomenal state. It has everything anybody would want: oceans, mountains, deserts, as far as recreation. The only problem is it has just too frigging many people. And from time to time, it becomes somewhat anti-business. And if you're a big business and you have attorneys that can handle all the legal aspects that are thrown at you, that's fine. But we weren't. And our workman's compensation just became absolutely almost unaffordable. And so that was the impetus for us to move out of California. We were actually going to move into Nevada, which is a business-friendly state. We couldn't find anything that we wanted to buy around the Reno area, which is where we were looking. And Las Vegas really wasn't never into the picture. But my oldest son had moved to Colorado in the late 80s. And he kept urging us to take a look at Colorado. And he lived in Boulder. And so once we couldn't find anything in Nevada, we decided, well, let's take a look at Boulder. And we found a plot of land, bought it, and built a building. And we've been here ever since 1992. And needless to say, as a business grew, we needed more and more space. And so eventually we would have had, even if we stayed in California, we would have had to move the plant because it just wasn't big enough for the growth of the company. And so now we have a building that's 40,000 square feet, which is probably 10 times the size of, if not more than, our original building that we started in. So there was a logical reason for every move. And my guess is we'll stay in Boulder for a long time. I can look out my window right now and see the Rocky Mountains. It's an absolutely wonderful state. It's pro-business. And the people in Colorado are just wonderful people. It's a great place to live.
Well, and you're in the heart of so much outdoor recreation, so many opportunities, so many great businesses. And there's a heritage of companies that have come out of Boulder as well. Around that era of the 1950s, you've got people like Jerry and Ann Cunningham and Leroy and Alice Holubar starting companies in Boulder. So you're part of a lineage of companies that have a connection to California, but also to to Colorado and Boulder specifically, which is interesting.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting about Boulder, and I have no idea why, is it's also a center for the food industry in terms of all natural and organic. It's just amazing how many businesses start up in the Boulder area. And I should say the Front Range and not only Boulder, in the organic food industry and or the all natural food industry. So I guess it's because the people that do those businesses like the environment here, and that's the common denominator. I really don't know, but it's just kind of funny. But certainly the key to the mountains is definitely a draw.
Right. In terms of philanthropy and impact, I know that that's something that you all hit very hard on your website, and you talk about philanthropy being really important. When did that start? You know, when did this focus on doing more than just making money? You know, when did that happen? Was that something that developed early on in the life of the company or later on, or when did that come about?
When my son became president, he really got that started. And you're probably familiar with 1% for the Planet, mm-hmm. which I think yep. was started by Patagonia or one of the Yvonne companies. And it's 1% of sales, not 1% of profits. And so our whole family is environment oriented, wilderness oriented, climate change oriented. We've been that way for forever. And so we just started putting our money where our brain was. And so he really started that. I'm not sure when 1% for the Planet got started, but we were probably among the first people that got involved in it. And we've been that way ever since. And now every year our contributions to those various activities, climate change, wilderness, grow every year. And all of us in this industry have one common denominator, and that is to do backpacking, you need wilderness. And the supply of land in wilderness shrinks every year. Once you build a road, you pretty much, you don't destroy the wilderness, but you open it up to a lot of activities that aren't necessarily backpacking oriented. And so we've always been very active, even in the 80s, in trying to being part of organizations. We tried to, one, introduce the wilderness to high school and college age kids, and did whatever we could to drum the message home to try to preserve as much wilderness as we could.
I think what's really exciting, and I've talked to Duane about this as well, is that you all are coming up on a very significant milestone, an anniversary, I guess. What are your thoughts on coming up on 75 years as a company? I guess, where does your mind go when you think about being a part of something that's been around that long? That's really special and pretty abnormal.
Well, as you probably know, there's the average age of a company is far less than 75 years. And so for a company to survive 75 years over the changes that we've experienced in that time through literally everything because of technology is pretty amazing. And so I'm an old guy now, and even though I certainly was alive when Dryalite was founded, but it's incredible to know that it's lasted that long. And quite frankly, it's stronger now than it ever has been. So it just goes to show you that if you have a product that serves a need and you do a decent job of it, you can survive in this world regardless of how drastically it changes.
Do you have any plans for the 75th anniversary? Maybe you can't say, but I'm sure you have something planned.
Well, it's not that if I had, I would tell you, but I'm not that active in the company anymore. So Duane would have those answers, but yes, we will definitely do something. I'm not sure what it will be.
Go ahead.
The other thing that's, you might know that we have another product line called Astronaut Foods. Mm-hmm. And it's using freeze-dried ice cream, basically, and some freeze-dried foods packaged in an astronaut foods pouch. And we sell it to museums like the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum is one of our largest customers, and Amazon and places like that. Well, it's coming up on its 50th anniversary next year.
Oh, wow.
And so we have a couple of big anniversaries back to back, so to speak. And we will do something for both of them to promote the brands. But that's out of my hands now. So when it's all done, said and done, they'll tell me what they're going to do, and I'll shake my head and say, great idea.
That's great. Maybe a fun question. Do you have a favorite food that you make or have made in the past?
Well, quite frankly, my favorite one was the beef stroganoff, because at the time when we first started, we had a sauce where you could actually taste the sour cream. And since then, as I said, all of our ingredients were bought from processors. And unfortunately, the people that produce the sour cream that we used to buy, it's not available anymore. But to me, that was an absolutely delicious meal. I never got tired of it because we had mushrooms in it as well as the sour cream sauce and, of course, beef and the noodles. And that was probably to this day, my favorite meal that we produced at Backpackers Pantry. We still have beef stroganoff, but in my opinion, it isn't as good as it used to be.
Do you have a meal that you've been serving the longest or producing the longest? Like, do you still make that Spanish rice that Dry Light made?
No, it's very unique for a meal to survive longest. But I wouldn't be surprised if beef stew, beef stroganoff is one of them. Because we had that in the very early days. And also just regular beef stew and chicken with rice, which is a good meal for kids because it's just basically chicken, the sauce, and rice with some vegetables. And so a lot of the meals in today's world are exotics, like pad thai. If you said pad thai to a 7-year-old, he probably wouldn't know what you were talking about. But if you said chicken and rice, they would probably go ahead and try it and eat it. And so some of our simpler meals are more popular with children than what I would call some of our exotic entrees.
Yeah, that's great. Well, what did we miss? I know that was quick to do an overview of the company. That's a lot of history to put into, 45 minutes, but what did we miss? What do you want people to know about your contributions to the industry and your time, building this company?
Well, I would just say that we're probably as focused now on our philanthropy that we are on anything else. We spend a lot of time on it. It's very important to us. And we would love it if the wilderness would just stay the same and not decrease anymore. And so we're doing everything we can to have that happen. It's just an uphill battle, though, as the world wants more and more resources, and generally speaking, they're in the wilderness areas if they haven't been discovered already. So the food, needless to say, our food business is very important to us, but also our extracurricular activities and philanthropy is also just as important to us. But I have the luxury of doing that because, as I said, I'm retired. Dwayne, on the other hand, who you met as the CEO, he's the one that's in the trenches day to day, making sure the food gets produced correctly, making sure that we're servicing our customers. And as you also know, the retail environment has changed so much with the advent of Amazon and e-commerce business. I'm kind of lucky that I was involved in the business on a permanent basis when things were a little simpler, because it certainly is more complex and demanding today than it was when we first got started.
Can you talk a little bit about your wife's involvement? You mentioned her being the general manager. When did that come about? I mean, was she involved in the early days, and kind of how did her role evolve as well? I'm curious.
Well, as I said, when we bought the company in 1971, both my partner and I went back to full-time jobs in 1972. And at that point in time, my wife became the general manager. And she was the general manager from 72 all the way up until 1980 when we moved to Redding, California. And at that time, I was more active in the business on a day-to-day basis. And then I went back to work on a full-time basis for a company that I left in 1982. And once again, she became the general manager, although at that time, the business was only a few miles from where we lived, so it wasn't as laborious as it was when she was having to commute through Los Angeles. But she was really the general manager from about 1982 to 1992 when we moved it to Boulder, Colorado. And at that time, my oldest son became active in the business, and my wife still worked for it, but not on a full-time basis. So I don't know if we could have done it without her, quite honestly. She was extremely important in running the business and did a great job. And it wasn't necessarily her idea. She got the job by default and did a phenomenal job of doing it. It was extremely important to the success of the business.
And your wife's name is Jan, right?
Yes, Janice. And she passed away in 2019.
And then your son, what was your son's name?
Rodney.
And Rodney was the general manager or president for a time?
He became president shortly after we moved to Boulder.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Well, this has been great just to learn more about the company. I'm interested in what you're doing. I've had great conversations with Dwayne, and I'm excited about the future of the company as well. It's been great to have him out here visiting us here on campus and digging through our archives, and it's motivated us to try to find more archival material about, you know, from food companies in the outdoor industry. And we found that there's not a lot of material out there that we've come across. So I think there's maybe some opportunity for us to build out more of an archive of outdoor food companies, which maybe we can talk more about. So,
yeah, I would say that other than Mountain House, who's been around for a long time, there most of the companies in the industry now, it's a pretty fast turnover. It's not an easy business, and it's seasonal, needless to say, because it's summer-oriented. And so if you don't have another business besides just the dried food, and if you're not into the food storage, which is a totally different industry, it's tough. And so most of the food companies that are out there now are young and don't have much of a history.
Right. Well, Ron, this has been great. I'm going to end it here, but I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story.
Well, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Highlander Podcast. For more conversations with outdoor leaders, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, watch episodes on the Outdoor Product Design and Development YouTube channel, or on opdd.usu.edu/podcast. Follow along on Instagram at USU Outdoor Product, and let us know how you're enjoying the show.